I'll start with a little word of explanation. You might be wondering why all the doors and windows are open when a hurricane is coming. I thought maybe we would be hospitable to Sandy. No, actually what happened was the man came from the oil company to service the burner on Wednesday, and so of course it does not work. And that means that a lot of oil fumes came up into the space this morning. Joe let me know by text message as soon as he arrived. And so the burner is off, the man is coming, and the doors and windows are open. But I would not mind if the neighbors heard what I have to say. The text is this pivotal moment in the story we just heard. Then Jesus said to him, "What is it you want me to do for you?" This morning, for the second time, I want to use the privilege of this pulpit for us to speak together about the future God is calling us to here at St. John's. And to do that, I want to draw a little bit of a contrast between two questions, two requests. The request posed in last week's gospel reading and the question posed by our old friend Bartimaeus today. So in case you don't remember, the question last week was posed by the brothers in the company of the disciples, James and John, the sons of old man Zebedee. The last time we saw Zebedee, he was in the fishing boat that his sons worked together with him. They were sitting, doing the customary work of fishing, mending the nets. When Jesus passed by and called them. And the last picture we have of old Zebedee is of him sitting alone in the boat as his sons traipse off to follow the wandering preacher. James and John, in at the beginning, and so perhaps they felt some justification, some authority on which to base the request that was contained in the question they asked last week. Their request begins in these words: "We want you to do whatever we ask of you." Kind of brazen, don't you think? They must have believed that Jesus had some kind of authority to hand out heavenly cabinet positions. But I am not sure they would have been nearly so bold in making their request if they actually believed that they were presenting themselves before the very person of God. So the boldness, the self-directedness of their question cuts the ground out from beneath their feet. They are in it for themselves. Their question begins from the perspective of their own advantage. Now think about Bartimaeus. To be blunt, Bartimaeus is a gadfly. He is not part of the in crowd. He is not respectable company. He is that person you try to avoid at coffee hour. He has not been there from the beginning. He has not seen all the miracles that Jesus has done, like the apostles have, for the very simple reason that he is blind. This is how the disciples obviously regard him. The text says that many of those around are angry with him. They sternly order him to quiet down, which is another way of saying, stop trying to have a place here. You don't belong. You're not worthy. There is an echo here of a text that Tim Strayer preached on some weeks ago, the eagerness of the disciples to shut down anyone out there who doesn't quite do things the way they think they should be done. Jesus cuts through all the nonsense and all the posing and simply says, bring him here. Again, Jesus, the upsetter of order. Again, Jesus turning upside down the rankings and the distinctions that we so instinctively create. And then comes the pivot of the whole story. Bartimaeus shouting, pleading for attention, brought forward. He's thrown off his cloak. He is standing almost naked before Jesus. And he is there because he began not from a perspective of his own advantage, but instead from a deep conviction, a conviction so deep he was willing to shout it out in the middle of the crowd at the risk of ridicule and ostracism. A conviction of who Jesus is. Jesus is the God who is love. Jesus is the source of hope in the world that is coming just over the horizon. And so Bartimaeus gets a very different kind of response than James and John got. James and John came asking Jesus to do whatever they asked. Bartimaeus came saying without embarrassment who he thought Jesus was. And so the tables are turned. And here in the center of the story, all of the shouting is quieted, all of the arguing stops, and now Bartimaeus is standing before the very presence of love itself. And he is asked the same question that was asked of James and John. What is it? What is it you want me to do for you? That question is the pivot of the whole story. In the moment that it is asked, the whole universe stands still. Now, here's what that means for us. We disciples, we sometimes poor in spirit. We sometimes worried, sometimes downhearted folk who claim the name of Christians. In this moment, at this hour, in this place, Jesus is standing with us and posing this question to us. What is it you want me to do for you? What is it we want Jesus to do for us? What is it we are asking for at this moment? Do we dare to ask? You all know that I came to this church 28 years ago, a much younger man, with a very different idea of what my life would be about. And you all know that about 15 years ago or so, I left this place to go off on the trail of ordained ministry and take up the work of that call in other places. And by God's grace, for more than 3 years, I have been here. And now, we are all in this moment of discerning the future shape and substance of our ministry together. But I know that the St. John's I have returned to is not the same one that I left in 1997. And I know that it is not the same church at all that we first arrived at back in 1984. I have reflected long and hard on the differences I have come to sense between the church then and the church now. I know a great deal happened here that I did not see, that I did not hear, that I'm only dimly aware of. We are still a place that draws people into the gift of community. We are still a place that accepts all kinds of people, thank God, because it means that I was accepted here, and you were too. We are still a place that provides for everyone who comes here a social network, not the virtual kind, the real kind. real people who really become part of each other's lives. But here is what for me is by far the most important difference between then and now. I sense that for reasons I do not fully understand, we are a place with much more fear. We are more afraid now. We might say we're being pragmatic, or we are being realistic, or we are being businesslike, or careful. And all of those things are excellent qualities. But the problem is, none of them involve the quality of faith. Faith is what takes you out beyond the safety of pragmatism. Faith is what gets you out of the dark corner of cynicism. Fear is what closes down the horizon of possibility. It takes away our confidence that God needs us here, right now, to do something. To do something together. And worst of all, it makes us blind to the fact that whenever we are together, whenever we gather here on Sunday morning or around the vestry table or in the discernment committee or in the book group or at the Monday lunch program, Jesus is standing right here in front of us asking us, what is it you want me to do for you? So what do we want Jesus to do for us? Here's what I believe. The possibilities are endless, so long as, like Bartimaeus, we ask the question in faith. James and John were asking out of fear. They were afraid of being overlooked or of not being appreciated or recognized or being in second place or second rank or out of the in crowd. But Bartimaeus asks out of faith. His whole story begins with him being willing to risk embarrassment at making plain what he believes. And he is willing to do it because it is so important to him. It is not something incidental about his life that he believes Jesus, this man from Nazareth, is his hope for the future, for everybody's future. It is not just one of many things about Bartimaeus, this idea that he has about Jesus. It's not there alongside a lot of other interesting facts about Bartimaeus, his job, his neighborhood, his zip code, his income, whatever. It is the single most important orienting thing about his whole life. It sets his priorities. It makes him willing to risk ridicule. It gives his life purpose and direction. His faith calls him, pushes him, demands of him that he does whatever it takes to be given a chance to be in the presence of the one he believes with all his heart, holds hope for the future. And when he gets there, here's the question. What is it you want me to do for you? And now we are being asked that question. How shall we respond? I know this with all my heart. If we ask out of our faith, whatever faith we can summon, that God is with us and has work for us to do, then we will get an answer. It may not be the answer we want. It may not be the answer that we expect, but this is God's church. It is God's work we do here. It is God's message that we're asked to proclaim here. So what shall we ask of Jesus? Jesus, let us see again. Okay. But then let us be prepared to see, to really see the work that God is calling us to do here. Jesus, let us hear again. All right, but then don't be surprised if what we hear is people ridiculing our faith or labeling us with all the other Christians that they cannot stand, or asking us how they might find something like the connection we have found here with God and other people. Jesus, let us live with confidence again. Take away from us this burden of fear, this fear of the future that keeps our heads down and our hearts hesitant. Well, okay. But then be ready to live as people of faith, not as people of pragmatism. People confident that God is actually here waiting for us and there in the future that we are being called toward. This is God's place. It is meant to be a place of possibility, God's possibility. Jesus is now asking us what possibilities we want to have. The best evidence that we will respond to Jesus in faith will be if we ask for something completely, totally, utterly unreasonable. Because then we will be about something that requires faith. It is good for us to be reasonable people. It is certainly good for us to be reasonable, gentle, gracious in our life together. But friends, reasonable people do not change the world. Because reasonable people make peace with the world as it is. God needs us to change the world. God needs us to show that the only way mercy and love and compassion will be shown to be the most powerful, the most transformative forces in the world will be if we actually live them out here. Despite the fact that it is unreasonable. Fear does nothing but limit our possibilities. Faith will do nothing but expand them. God is now calling us into the full realization of our possibilities. What is it you want me to do for you? Jesus, give us courage, real courage, to ask of you just one thing: greater, bolder, eager faith. Amen.